And at the end of the day, it's not really about who you know, it's about who knows you and who's going to speak your name in these rooms.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Patty Medina, former coach and current associate athletic director at American University. Medina's career in athletics began on the court, where she coached at multiple levels, including successful stints in both high school as well as the collegiate basketball levels. She later transitioned into athletic administration, bringing her coaching perspective to leadership roles that have impacted student athletes and programs all across the board. At American University, Coach Medina has been instrumental in overseeing key areas of operations, compliance, and program development. Her unique blend of coaching experience and administrative expertise allows her to bridge the gap between what happens on the floor and what drives success behind the scenes. She has developed a reputation for building strong cultures, guiding coaches, and fostering environments where athletes can thrive. In this episode, we talk about the top things an athletic department might be looking for while in the hiring process of a potential head coaching candidate. A full breakdown of how a hiring process works at the collegiate level, and some great questions to ask in an interview, including proper ways to follow up with the department post-interview. Please welcome to the podcast, Patty Medina. Dr. Dish Basketball is revolutionizing basketball training with the number one selling shooting machine in the world. Our innovative systems are the only training solutions that deliver more reps, motivation, and fun, empowering coaches and players to elevate their game faster than ever before. Featuring advanced analytics, immersive game-like features, and an easy-to-use interface, our state-of-the-art shooting machines are the preferred choice for progressive teams worldwide. Welcome back, coaches. We are back. Rising Coaches Podcast here with another episode. You have Alan Major, Doug Caputo here, the voices that have been going on. We were just joking around 194 episodes. So we are happy to have another opportunity to talk with you. This time, we are not only speaking with somebody who has some coaching experience, but also somebody with the director experience, being the Associate Athletic Director at American University. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Patty Medina. Coach Medina, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Doug. Happy to be here.
You're welcome. Yeah, once a coach, always a coach.
Yep.
No, like I said, we're happy to go over, especially one, talking about the athletic director side, because that's one thing, the interview process, all of that stuff, that is something that coaches don't necessarily know about unless they go through it. It's hard to be able to talk people about those. I've been fortunate this past year to at least see the other side, the hiring process from the administrative side. But it's definitely great, and there's a lot to go on. So I'm sure you're going to have a lot of great information. Before we get into any of that, as I mentioned, you started as being a coach. What guided you from stepping away from coaching to more in the administrative side?
Yeah, again, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And as I mentioned, I have a great history with Rising Coaches, and I love this platform. So I'm happy that it's 194 and counting. So honored to be here. The number one reason, honestly, why I transitioned out. So I coached for 17 years and I did it the grassroots way. Started at the middle school, then went to JV, and then went to varsity, and then JUCO. Did JUCO for about 6-7 years, and then NAIA level and CCAA level. And it got to the point, my last stint was at Our Lady of the Lake University in San Antonio, Texas, as associate head coach there. And it got to the point where I was missing so many life experiences for my son that I told him that by the time he started middle school that I would look to transition out of coaching. And so it was really more so holding true to my promise and making sure that I held that promise to him. And it was just looking to transition. So initially I thought I was going to transition into sports, teaching sports administration, because at Our Lady of Lake University, I was coaching while also teaching. And so I was teaching sports management. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go the professor route. But then a friend of mine said, you would be a great administrator. Like, I think you'd be a great administrator. And so I sat with it and I said, you know what? In the 17 years that I coached, not once did I have a female athletic administrator. all my administrators were male. In 17 years of coaching, all of them were male. And so that was enough motivation for me to say, okay, yeah, I'm going to go in this route. And now I get to be one of the few Latina administrators, and I have the pleasure and the honor really of being the highest ranking Latina here at American University as well. So it's been a trajectory, but it feels, I joke all the time that I'm the rookie and the vet, right? Because I've been in it for 20 plus years, but really this November will be year two, or December will be year two here at American University and at the Division I level on the administrative side.
Wow. Was it anything that when you first started doing it, was anything that kind of surprised you, or anything that was kind of like, wow, I really like this? Or was it kind of, I don't know about this for a little while as you're trying to figure it out? Like, some people hit the ground running. Some people you trudge in the mud for a little bit before you get rolling. So how was that transition for you just from coaching to administration?
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, COVID really solidified it for me, because during COVID, and I mentioned I was helping Rising Coaches, and it was a lot during COVID. And during COVID, all my coaching friends were like salivating to get back on a court. And they're just like, I can't wait to get back on the court. And I'm over here doing these Zoom things with my players and coaches and teams. And so then I'm like, I don't miss it. Is there something wrong? Because I don't miss it. And then they're like, why don't you miss it? I said, well, I'm still impactful. I'm still mentoring. I'm still doing leadership. And so honestly, COVID really solidified it for me, because I realized, okay, what do I love about coaching? And for me, it was the mentorship and the leadership aspect of it. And I said, okay, what can I go into that I can still do that? And so when I got into administration, if I'm being quite frank, I realized that I was actually selling myself short, because when I was coaching, I was influencing 15 to 18 young ladies. Now I'm influencing and have direct contact and mentorship opportunities with 350 student athletes from all sports, not just basketball. I have, in my last institution, I was at the junior college level, the soccer players, men's soccer, would come in, and a lot of them, they represented 13 different countries, the majority of them Latin American countries. And so I was like mom to them. So they would be sleeping in my office, I'm working, and they're just hanging out. And I said, wow, like I've really have been selling myself short. Like I've already impacted a lot of people in my entire life, but I'm like, I could have really influenced even more had I really just gotten out of my way. And I was just so pressed and so adamant about being a head coach that I don't respect for everyone's faith and beliefs, but for me, it was one of those things where it's like, God is going to let you have what you want. And he did. He let me have my coaching career. It wasn't the best, but it was something that like I enjoyed. And then when I finally got out of my way and I finally said, okay, God, where do you see me? Now, within what I couldn't do in 17 years, in the 17 years that I was coaching, the only thing I wanted to do was become a Division I assistant coach. It wasn't even a head coach. It wasn't even, like, I was like, I'll take a Dobo position. And I could not get it. In 17 years of coaching, I could not get that opportunity. So then I transitioned to admin. My first year, I'm an assistant athletic director and gym teacher at a K-12 school. I'm there a year and a half. A year and a half later, I'm at a JUCO as an associate AD. By the time year three comes around, I'm a Division I associate athletic director. And that's something that like I couldn't do in 17 years. So I tell people all the time, like the moment you get out of your way and just say, okay, Lord, that you want for me, that's things become easy. And I think that's something that I would absolutely tell my younger self is, I know that's what you want, but what is it that is really for you? And how does he want to use you in that?
No, that's powerful. Love it.
That's the one thing I have to say is, especially being in coaching, there's always a point where you start to question yourself. And whether that's early on, whether that's 17 years down the line, there's always that point where you're like, is this what I want to do? And then you go through all these different things. That's why I always like to ask people, especially coaches who have not only went from point A to grassroots to professional or Division I or whatever. It's because like, how many times did you question yourself throughout that process? So there's always that moment and you're just like, you got to pull through. And I'm happy to hear that it actually turned out in your favor, obviously. Now you're doing something. You made it to the Division I level. Not only do you have one son that you made a great promise to, but now you have 300 and however many sons and daughters hanging out in your office and people to impact. But it's definitely a great thing. And it sounds like that was a leap of faith, was taking that jump away from coaching to be able to get the opportunity to be in the administrative side.
No, absolutely. And honestly, I don't think I ask myself enough if I miss it. Everybody always asks me all the time, like, do you miss it? Do you miss it? And without hesitation, I say no. Like, I don't miss coaching at all. But I do realize, like, now that I'm in it, I'm like, wow, I should have made the transition sooner. Like, it's a lot better work-life balance as well.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, you're not coaching basketball anymore, but you're coaching people.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. Those same transferable skills are still showing their faces on a daily basis, just in a different way. You don't have a whistle and a ball, but now it's just through, again, mentorship, leadership opportunities. Again, I mean, think about those guys, just having someone, you know, from a Latino perspective that could just connect with and relate to and come in their office, steal your snacks, like that kind of stuff. That's still making an impact. And anytime we let coaching get bigger or more important than that, making an impact should be the goal. Yeah, winning games, great. We all want to win. You want to win as much as you want. But if you're not making a dent in kids' lives in some way, shape, or form, then we're all missing the boat. And you're just finding a way to do it in a different way. So the ball and the whistle may be gone, but you're still coaching. It's just in a different way, which is cool.
Yeah. And I still get to scratch that itch through my basketball camps. I'll have like basketball camps in the summer. And so I'm like, okay, I get a week of coaching and then I'm done. I'm like,
that's all you need. That 1 week of camp is all you need.
Get that fixed. That's right.
Yeah.
So let's get to we'll go to the more athletic department side of things. So the role that you're in now, being the associate athletic director at a Division I American University, first off, they had a phenomenal season this past year with at least the basketball program. That's great to see. But then on top of that, like, not saying when the process comes and if when they're hiring for a new head coach down the line at some point, what are some of the things that you have seen in any of the schools that you have been in? Like, some of the top things that you would say are really high on the priority list for an athletic department and what they are looking for in a head coach?
Yeah, absolutely. And to the point you made, Dwayne Simpkins did an amazing job this past year. And I actually just had the opportunity to go through that hiring process for our women's basketball head coach position. And so we hired Killian this year. She's coming from Penn State. And so I was able to be a part of her process. And so the way that worked was, and one thing I realized too, from a coaching perspective to now being in the admin side, I didn't realize how important, especially with higher level positions or high profile positions, how important agents are and search firms. And so I didn't know about agents or search firms coaching at the NAIA level, because you don't have to deal with any of those. And so that's something that I try to tell other coaches and try to give the resources and the information to coaches that might not be aware of search firms or agents and how important they might be. And so in our case, for Dwayne's position, we did go through a search firm. And that was something that, because it's one of our highest revenue, if not highest revenue sport, then we tend to go through search firms. And again, so that's something that as a previous coach, I didn't know that. I'm thinking like, you can just email someone and say, hey, I want to be a part of it. But in reality, it's like, hey, it's going through Parker or DHR or through Adam at Renaissance, or now he's at Clutch. So like in those situations, that was something for me that was enlightening, because again, I had never been a part of it. And so coincidentally, I was asked like three months into my job here at AU, Brian Stanchak reached out to me and said, hey, I want you to be a part of the head coach's training center. Can you be on the panel? And I said, sure. And I said, what's the topic? And he's, oh, hiring practices. And so I said, I have never been a part of one. So you find out what happened for Dwayne's. And so I went around the office and I asked everyone how his process was. And so they said they interviewed. And I asked, like, how did he even get on y'all's radar? How did he even get on your radar? And they said, he's a DMV native. He's a DMV native. We knew that we wanted someone homegrown. We knew someone because we want more fan engagement. So the more you can get people from here. And so I said, okay, mental note, that's good to know. And so then when we got to the women's head coaching position, that was something that we also wanted to do, right? We wanted to bring in more fan engagement. Like, we love our international students, but at the end of the day, there's only so many seats that they're filling, right? Because all their family is overseas. And so that was something that we looked for in the women's head coach. And Coach Killian had used to be at William Mary. And so she has those ties within the DMV. But yeah, the process was similar to everywhere I've been at, but I didn't realize how much longer the process is at the Division I level. It's like a full day interview. Even mine was like an 8-hour interview. And so they had the AD, the deputy AD, and then the sport administrator were the first committee. And then so they, with them, they asked, hey, do any of you have some names that you want to add to the pot? And then I added my names. The men's basketball coach, Dwayne, added his, like a couple of us added names to the list. And then for the women's position, we didn't go through a search firm. So then our AD was the one to make the phone calls and talk to everybody and look at their bios and do his research. And so we had about 10 great candidates, narrowed it down to 4. And then those 4 came on campus. And so when they came on campus, we had a second interview committee, which included the trainers, strength and conditioning coaches, athletic trainers, strength and conditioning coaches, compliance, business office for budgeting, myself, and then academics. And so then that was the second cohort. And then Dwayne was also part of that, because a lot of our candidates were like, we want to speak to Dwayne because we want to know how he did it this his first year. And he was part of that conversation as well. So it's safe to say that it's different everywhere you go, but once you realize, okay, are they going through a search firm or are they going internal, then you know the process of it all. And so I've been blessed to be able to watch it happen from the outside looking in. And so then now I can share that information with coaches and be like, oh, one of the things too that was interesting is, and this is something I would share with, you know, the audience, is like, the you have to network when you don't need anything. And so the people that I shared from my short list were people that I keep in contact with, that I watch their trajectory and all this. But kid you not, I had people that when I coached at the NAIA level that I was telling you about, when I coached there, I hadn't heard from them since I coached against them in 2016. And then all of a sudden I'm getting a text message like, hey, Patty, by the way, I saw you guys have an opening at American. I'd like to put my pot. And I'm just like, that's not how it works. So I definitely recommend that the networking happens when you don't need anything, and just really staying up on current events. And you can see based on performance, like what coaches might get phased out, what coaches, there might be a change. And I think that's something that I heard about Dwayne, is that he was very much intentional about following the trajectory of AU basketball, not just the year before, knowing that there might be an opportunity, but in the long run, because we were one of his dream schools. And so he took a lot of focus into it. And that's something that, like, I learned from him, and I'm applying that now for my next position, my next opportunity. I'm like, what would be my dream position? And then let me stay up to date now, even if it might not happen 4, 5, 10 years from now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, for sure. It's funny. We had Marsha Lanou from CSA recently on our round table. And one of the questions one of the attendees had asked her was, when should I start using a search firm? He was actually a D3 coach. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, maybe you don't, obviously you don't plan on being a Division III coach. You plan on maybe trying to move along at some point. But the suggestion we made was, maybe you're not using a search firm right now.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not your choice whether you use the first, it's a search firm's choice whether mm-hmm. they use you. But the idea was to him, like, start planting seeds now. Like,
yeah,
reach out to somebody like a Marcy now, or Katie Young now, or those, just plant seeds, because 3 to 5 years, you never know. And then you go to Final Fours, and if there's a mixer or a social or something you can attend, or whatever people might do in the summer, is there a conference somehow being held in your city where administrators are going to be, and you meet somebody at a Starbucks for 20 minutes. So there's ways to, like you said, you start planting seeds, and before the crops pop up out of the ground, that's the whole point. You got to do your work. Try to do your work early as best you can.
Yeah. And this business is all about relationships. It's all about who you know. But what someone told me last year, actually my first NACTA, I went and I didn't know anybody. This was not last year, but the year before. So the last time I was in Orlando, I went to NACTA, which is literally like the final four for ADs, right? And so I met NACTA and I don't know anybody. Or I know three people, four people, right? And so then I was talking to a mentor, Lacey Carmen Johnson, who works for the Toronto Raptors. And I'm like, wow, I don't know anybody here. And she's like, you know what? She's like, get to know, if you can leave here with three relationships, three good relationships, you're good, right? And then she says, and at the end of the day, it's not really about who you know, it's about who knows you and who's going to speak your name in these rooms. And I've been now in situations where, for example, I just met a search firm yesterday, and I was really just meeting with him to ask him about the process and what they're doing. And to your point, planting my seeds, because in the next 5-6 years, I'd like to be an athletic director. And so I'm like, let me plant my seeds. And so I was meeting with him, or I had a friend introduce me to him, and he texts me back. He's, oh yeah, he's heard of you. He follows you on LinkedIn. And so again, like the fact that I'm trying to get to know him, but he already knows who I am. That in itself is how coaching works too, right? Like athletic directors are looking. And one of the things I tell our coaches here, and this is something I'd love to share with your audience, is that anytime a team is traveling, right? Anytime you travel, especially because now I'm on the admin side, so I see the admin side of it. Anytime you travel, there's always going to be an administrator on site. And so if you're traveling somewhere and let's say we're hosting Maine, right? Let's say Maine comes down and I'm on site. I'm not the admin for men's basketball, but there's always an administrator on site. I tell our coaches that want to become head coaches, I say, anytime you travel, go find that administrator on site, because more than likely, if it's men's basketball, it's a deputy AD or a senior associate AD. Go and introduce yourself and say, thank you for hosting us. Thank you for the hospitality. We appreciate you. I said, because you know what? People don't do that. I said, and it's the little things like that when a team comes to visit and they say, hey, your athletic staff, your table was awesome. Your hospitality room was great. And it has nothing to do with basketball. But then when we're thinking about another position, I'm going to say, you know what? That guy was really nice and he was very attentive. And so I'm going to watch him when he coaches and see how he coaches. And so that's what I tell young coaches all the time, like especially Division I, right? Because you have to have an admin on site. I said, whenever you visit, go find the admin on site, introduce yourself. Go find the associate athletic director of events and the people that set up the chairs. Go introduce yourself, because at the end of the day, all of them are eventually going to be on the committee.
Yeah. Or be ADs themselves.
Correct. Yeah.
No, that's great. Nat, I would say the toughest part would be making, especially for me, now I'm in a Division III assistant. So being able to make that, at least when I'm thinking back when I was a GA at a different Division III school, like trying to make those connections and actually make them genuine as somebody who you can't just randomly reach out to somebody. You can, but the actual relationship is hard to build over the phone, and you have to get out there, attend some events, put your face to a face, or even just like you said, go to a game, shake their hand if you can meet them, look up the roster of who's the people in the athletic department, yep. Look at their face, all the faces are on there, right? And then now you're like, okay, these are the people, if I hit an American game, I know Patty's over sitting over here, I can know to go talk to her, or whoever it might be. So that's phenomenal. That's somebody will definitely take some tips from that. And I wanted to ask too about, so you were talking about a minute ago, you were talking about the hiring process. You were saying how it goes. It's a full day thing. Can you go through, now you don't have to go through every single step, but just like a quick synopsis of what a full day might look like?
For a coaching position, yes.
For a coaching position, yes.
Yeah, so the way it worked is they would come on campus. They usually bring them a day before. So the day before, because the actual day starts really early. So for us, it started, for them here, it started, and this is based on the women's. I'm sure Dwayne's had a similar structure, but it started around 9 a.m. So they would either meet, and every candidate met with the same people, but in different order based on the people's availability. And for example, one day they would meet the president first. So they would do the 9 a.m. with the president. Another candidate did their 9 a.m. with Dwayne. And so they met Dwayne first. And so it was a 9 a.m. just meetings. But the meetings consisted of obviously our athletic director, our president, our men's basketball head coach. The first panel was with all of our athletic training and strength and conditioning coaches. So they met with all of them first. And then they would meet with us. So us meaning executive staff. So it was the academics, business, compliance, all of them. And then they would take them to lunch. They go to lunch with the deputy AD or the sports supervisor. And then they come back and then they meet with maybe the provost or maybe our CFO, just depending on who they would have. And one of the things that I noticed from the candidates, even just being part of the women's candidate search or the head coaching search, is that the ones that did their homework, because here's the thing, we provide the itinerary the day before. So we provide the itinerary the day before, and the ones that went and did their homework were the ones that were the most impressive. And so I had actually Coach Killian, who got hired, she literally ran through my entire background and was like, you're a Hooper mentality and a nonprofit. And this, and I was just like, oh, wow. Like, she did her homework. And she was, out of all of them, she was the only one that did that. And it's no surprise that she's our head coach. And because, again, like, she took the initiative and the ownership of saying, I want to find out who I'm working for, who I'm going to work for. And I think a lot of times, and as you sent the questions, I saw the questions of red flags that coaches that we look for in coaches, but in reality, like, coaches need to look for red flags in institutions as well. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough. And I was on the short end of the stick of that because I avoided red flags when I was looking for coaching positions. And now I tell coaches all the time, hey, you are interviewing them as much as they are interviewing you. So if there's something that comes up within the 8 hour, because people can fake the funk for an hour, but once you're with an institution for 8 hours, something's going to come up, right? Something's going to come up. And so that's the part for me that I tell coaches all the time, that they should ask those questions. So that's how the search was for us here.
No, that's a big deal. Some of the best advice I've gotten, that people always said that you come up with questions or being able to drop one or two nuggets about people's backgrounds that are part of the process. It's so much more than just coaching basketball. Like, yeah, you're living with people. Like, they're making the decision on who they want to do. Do we want to live with this person?
Right. You end up spending more time with them with your actual family.
100%.
And it's funny because when I interviewed here, I did all my research. And it got to a point where the joke, like, during my interview, the joke was that I knew everybody's pets' names, because I had done such a deep dive on everybody that they're like, oh, you must know my dog's name too then, because you literally know everything about me. But the crazy thing is that as administrators, at least for me, I thought everybody did that. I'm thinking, like, everybody does their homework. But that was the thing for me, that it was like, that's one way to really stand out, is genuinely doing the research and realizing, like, is this an institution that I want to work for? And I commend coaches that say, you know what, because I've heard of other institutions where they'll interview and they'll finish through, and then at the end, they're like, there's just something nagging at me that this isn't it for me. So I commend coaches that can also do that. But one thing I will say is that the feeling should not be anything as far as distance, location, and the size of the school, anything like that, because you should have known that going into it. And so that's one of the things I've even heard search firms say this too, is don't waste people's time. If you know that you don't want to live in Louisville or that you don't want to live somewhere in the middle of nowhere, don't take the on-campus visit. Don't lead it on and just say, hey, and then your excuse is going to be like, I don't really like the cold. And so you knew that going in.
Yeah, no doubt.
You just took an opportunity from someone that genuinely wanted it to now something that we have no control over. And so that's the thing that I would also recommend.
Yeah. No, if something's ever going to move the needle one way or the other, let it be the people.
Yeah.
Like, because if you do all the other stuff and you're okay with living in Texas where it's often blazing hot, or living in Upper Maine where it's going to get a little nippy and snowy, or whatever it is, understand those things going in. But like, the people should be the reason, like you're saying, if it comes down to something either clicking and saying, yes, I feel this in a good way, or something, you know what? Yeah, that lunch meeting was weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was, but, you know, a few of the questions and wasn't a lot of eye contact or whatever you might feel might be the negative. So, yeah, you're right. But, yeah, you've dropped some serious nuggets in terms of how coaches can find little niches and ways and nooks and crannies to separate themselves, because that's ultimately what people want to do when they get in the mix of a search.
Yeah. And doing your own research to find out like what's really going on, right? Because again, like I said, people will paint a pretty picture for the 1 hour, 6 hours, however long you're there. But it's really finding out and asking those questions during the initial search. Like, what are the financials? What are the restraints? And that's why I think a lot of our candidates were so adamant about meeting with Dwayne, because I know Dwayne kept it real and was like, this is what I struggle with. This is what I got help with. And I commend the coaches for making those questions and asking those tough questions in the interview process, because it's a livelihood. You're changing your livelihood. You're uprooting. You're moving around. I've moved around. I'm in the DMV and I'm from San Diego, California. So it moves you around and you go where opportunities come. And so I think my generation was just so anxious to be head coaches, to be in those positions, because we didn't have the access to information that everyone does now, that we would just take whatever opportunity comes. And now these younger coaches can be picky and be okay with being picky and have that say.
So I want to make sure to ask this too. So you talked on make sure doing your research. First off, me and Al always do our research whenever we have people on here. We know you've been in the NBA with the Washington Wizards. We know about your history. Obviously, some great experiences. But no, like going to the research part of it, you exactly to your point, you're going to ask very bland questions. And you're going to ask very, what makes this program different than everybody else? I feel anybody can ask those questions. So off of that, what are some questions? Of course, now you've done the research, you've dug into the program. And I understand this question could be loaded because it also depends on the school and depends on what the person's looking for. But what are some like questions that you would probably recommend to people going through the process to dig a little deeper about specifics?
This is actually the best question because of the reason you just said. It's such a loaded, it's a loaded question in a sense of it depends on the institution and whatnot. But the number one question I tell people to ask, and I got this from my dear friend Delana Sardin at Parker. The number one question that coaches should ask the athletic director is, what does success mean to you? What does success mean to you? And how do you see me being successful in your institution? Because if they say winning and losing doesn't matter, we just want you to come in and bring in money, that might not align with your values. You want to go somewhere where the AD cares about winning, right? Or they might say, you know what? We want you to win, but the number one priority is retention. And so then you're like, okay, academics is important to me too, right? So then the way the athletic director will answer that question, it will be a sure giveaway as to whether you want to be a part of that institution or not, right? Because then, and I ask that too, like even with my positions, I say, oh, so what does someone in my position, what does success look like for someone in my position? And for me, they were just like, honestly, you're the first person in this position. We just want you to come in and do something. And I was like, all right, cool, easy. That works for me because that told me I'm going to have a lot of creative leeway, right? So that told me I can come in here and run my one man, one woman department to however I want. But as a coach, if you have an AD, if you're super competitive and you want to win and you go to a coach or an AD and the AD's, it doesn't really matter if you win or lose. Like, we just want retention and graduation rate. So then you have to think about it. That AD is not going to prioritize the resources that you will need to win as long as you're keeping retention, as long as your students are happy. Like, to them, mediocre wins and losses is going to be fine. And so I think that is the question that every coach should be asking an AD is what does success in my position look like for you? And then how will the institution help me in doing that? Because if a coach says you're going to come in here and you're going to win 20 games, then you say, great, I'm a competitor, but how are you going to help me win those 20 games? What are the resources available to me? And so I think that is the question that we all should be asking in any position. It's like, what is success? And really, they're giving you the keys to how you can come in and kill it, right? Like, they're literally telling you, no, like, doubt, what I want you to do. And so that has been a game changer for me. And I've been part of interviews where they'll say something and I was like, yeah, that's not sitting with me. That's not what I want to go in there and do. I want to go in there and change things. Like, even an institution, let's say you interviewing for an administration position and you're like, oh, everybody in the admin has been there for 15, 20 years. And it's, oh, what do you want me to come in? Oh, we just want you to continue doing what we're doing. And in my head, I might be like, no, I don't want to come in and change things. So now you're telling me I'm going to have a lot of resistance without telling me you're telling me.
A lot of
resistance with change, right? And so I think that if I can tell any coach what question to ask, and I tell all my mentors and my mentees that are still doing coaching interviews and all that, I'm like, ask this question. And even as an assistant coach, ask the head coach, what does that look like? Because you might think as an assistant coach that you want to come in and do on-court practices and all that, and the coach might just see you as the numbers person or the X's and O's person. You might not really do a lot of on-court things. And then that kind of, they tell you what it is that you're walking into.
No, 100%. I love that. Last year, not this past spring, but the spring before, used to be IUPUI here in town, but it's called IUND now. Mm-hmm. And was in that process. They were hiring a new head coach. And I'd actually asked the AD within the first 30 days, I would like to have a half day retreat or just a sit down with him and the president and all three of us define what success looks like for this program in all facets. Academic success, what's basketball success look like? And I'm like, we should lock ourselves in a room and we're not going to leave until we all agree on what that looks like. I said, not so much for good times, but I said, your program is kind of trying to redefine itself and rebuild itself. So this is for when things aren't going so great or two starters get injured and they're out for 6 weeks and we lose maybe 4 out of 6.
Right.
Like now that's when we need to be singing like the Temptations and all being in step. Right. Cause it's easy to, when you win a bunch of games, it's easy to be all fired up. But I said, I would want to have that meeting. We are totally synchronized from all the way through. And especially when times are tough. I'm glad you said that because you're right. Like they'll give you the answers to the test if you ask them, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. You just got to ask the right questions.
Yeah. All right. This question's for Alan Major here. Okay. I'm going to speak for him. I'm going to speak for both of us here. Following an interview, this is something that we've always talked about. Alan harps on it. It's huge. And I am a big advocate of it now, is writing the handwritten letters. But in other words, is a follow-up after the interview process. So now you just finished the interview, everything's done, the follow-up after. Emails are still always, a follow-up email is always still a thing. I know people send those out like etiquette-wise. Do you have a preference? Are those still in? Any advice for a post-interview?
Yeah, they're absolutely still in. I think it's just etiquette and courtesy. There's an etiquette and courtesy to it. And then especially knowing your audience. If you interview and the majority of them, I'm aging myself, millennials and 40 and up, like myself, 40 and up, we still love that stuff. We love the follow-up because that's how we were raised. That's what the expectation is for us. If you have a younger committee, they might not care. They might not care about that. And even with us, like I said, in the search that we just had, out of the 4 candidates that we had, only 2 sent thank you emails. And one of them is the one that we hired. And that just, because it gets to the point where they might all be great candidates. They might all be great candidates. So then you're like, okay, what's going to set them apart? And then if out of the 4, only 1 sends the thank you note, they're like, oh, that's it. That's the answer. And I had this, I can't remember who it was. And I was at a conference and he was on a panel and it was a gentleman, but I can't remember who it was. And he says, I write the thank you notes before I even interview, I put them in the mail and they literally get them the day after I interviewed. And it's so mind-boggling to them because they're like, wait, how did he know? But he's like telling us his secrets. He puts it in the mail a day or two before the interview, puts it in the mail. And so then either the day after the interview or maybe even the evening after of the interview, they receive the thank you notes and they're handwritten. I still do that. I literally have a stack of thank you notes that I send. And every time I'm at
there you go, Mage.
Yeah, every time I'm at a conference, every time so you guys should be expecting thank you notes from me is all I'm saying. Because again, like it's a courtesy thing, right? It's a courtesy or even like nowadays too, I think reading the room, right? If it's someone, for example, if it's someone via text or they say, hey, here's my number, reach out if you need anything. Let's say you met them in person and then you want to reach out even via text. I'll say, hey, thank you again for your time today. And then I still send the thank you note down the line, but at least you thank them in that process. And I mean, it's like courting and dating, right? You want to leave a great impression. And that's really one way to really set yourself apart. And hiring is dating right now. Like people forget all the old school stuff of not showing up empty handed and sending thank you and follow ups and all that. And so I think the more you learn the art of courtship in the interview process, including the thank you notes, I think it'll set you apart. Even if you don't get the job, right? Because there's times too where you might be the only one that sent the thank you card, but you didn't get the job. And then when it comes back around, you're going to be like, oh, I remember they sent this card. And that actually happened to me. I was interviewing before I was at when I was the gym teacher and K-12 at assistant AD, I interviewed for a job at the University of Maryland and it was for a coordinator position. At the time, I wasn't aware of the levels of titles in higher ed on the non-athletic side, because this was a non-athletic job. It was in rec, but it wasn't within college athletics. And so it was coordinator position, which I know now is like entry level. So I'm interviewing and I go through the interview process and the gentleman calls me and he's a great friend of mine now, but he calls me and he's, Patty, I can't give you this job. He's, you're overqualified. It's an entry-level position. I can't give you this job. And so I'm like so hurt because I'm like, I could have been a TERP, West Maryland, I could have been an UMD. So I'm hurt. And I'm like, he could have let me make that decision. 2 months later, I'm hired at American University. And so I send him a thank you note and thank you email. And I said, this is going to be the weirdest email, but I just want to say thank you for not hiring me. Because now I'm at AU. And so now he's like a good friend of mine. And he's, if there's ever anything I can do, let me know. And again, that follow-up is very important because you never know who is and who isn't, but at least control the controllables and know that you are the one that is. And you build relationships from them.
Yeah, for sure. No, I don't have any school logo right now, but that's my school logo right now, because that I don't have the ability to go into some office or room in the facility and pull out. But that's something that Doug and I drive him crazy with it, but I talk about it all the time because it's still, there's some things that still travel, and that type of appreciation and people feel that. And it can speak volumes about you. And it can, you never know when it could be a separator. You just never know.
Doug, you're the minority.
Yeah. No.
Oh no, he agrees.
I'm all for it.
Oh, okay. He's in the boat.
Yeah.
No, I just say
I'll wear him out with it. It's become a running joke with
Gotcha.
It.
Okay.
I'll always brings it up, but no, I 100% like.
Yeah.
So multiple practices that I have gone to, like college Division I colleges around me, I've gone to their practices. I've wrote them the handwritten letters. The job that I was just previously in at the school that I'm at now, the only reason I got that job. I did email write up or email follow-ups exactly as you're saying. They said, sorry, we're going to go with somebody else. Unfortunately, it was down to the final two. Guy turned the job down. I got a call a couple of days later. Hey, actually, he ended up turning the job down and family issues. Are you still interested? Now I was like, okay, you already shut me down, but it was one of those. But it was one of those, and now I've been there, and I've been at the school for 3 years now, and it ended up excelling from there. So it's like that 100%. They weren't going to let me know anything of it. And I probably wouldn't have even got offered the job, but I followed up. And then anytime I go to a university practice, like Pitt University, I wrote them all handwritten letters. One of my good friends now is an assistant over there because he texts me and we stay in touch. We even go out for drinks every now and then because like I met that connection from at the practice, but I wrote him a handwritten letter, gave him my number on there and said, if you ever want to connect, he text me. So no, I'm a huge advocate in it myself.
And yeah. It's funny, like you said, Patty, and Doug's doing that. He's not doing that to, he's not writing in the letter, oh, by the way, if you guys ever have an opening, right, think of me, love you, Dougie. Like he's not, he's doing that when yeah. there's nothing in it.
More. Love it's you just, at the bottom.
Yeah, XOXO at Dougie. Yeah, it's like, he's going to, I always tell people, like, try to network as a learner.
Yeah.
Go places to try to learn and pick people's brains. You're going to meet people by default.
Yeah.
Then that's your chance to create relationships, as opposed to if you always are, what's in this for me? Or people can smell that,
yeah,
you know, 10 miles away when you're coming through the door, if you have that approach. I tell people that are members of Rising Coaches all the time, they ask about advice and how can I want to do this and I want to meet some guys and I'm trying to get involved with things, and I get it, but just try to own, there's a radius where you live and how many of those places can you hit that may be places that you eventually want to be, but your approach is, let me walk in the building as a learner and as a brain picker, and then you're going to meet people by default, and then as you meet people, then that becomes your ability to start planting some seeds and building some relationships.
Yeah. No, and it's all about intentional networking too. I alluded to it earlier when Lacey gave me the advice of just walk out of here with three very purposeful, intentional relationships, because those three could lead to 20 others because they actually got to know you. Whereas if you get 20 watered down relationships, none of them are going to advocate for you because they just got a watered down version of you. Whereas now you have three really solid ones that are now speaking to their circle and their network and their friends. And so I think that's the number one thing too. A lot of people, and I hate the word, and I know I've been in discussions before with other people where it's, we hate the word networking, right? Because it's like net and then working, and it shouldn't be either work nor net, just focusing on the net of it and the work of it. It's relationships. At the end of the day, it's relationships, and it's what you make of it. And people ask me all the time, how do you maintain these relationships long term? And for me, it's, if I see something that reminds me of either one of you, like you'll be getting a text and it'll say, hey, like I just received a thank you note today, and I thought of you because we had this full conversation about thank you notes, right? And so those are ways to really stay in touch. And especially now with social media, like you can wish people happy birthday. You can,
you got everything.
Say, hey, congrats on the new house. There's ways to stay connected and have it be genuine without it feeling transactional. And at the end of the day, it's the number one key is continuing these relationships when you don't need anything, because then that's when they'll be more open to advocating for you.
One of my favorite things to do is if I have a layover in a friend's city, I'm like, hey, just passing through your city, thought of you, wanted to say what's up.
Yeah.
In your airport, whatever. Like, it's just another excuse to touch base with someone. Again, just saying hello, don't need anything. Had a layover in your city. Just had some time in the airport, want to say what's up. So if you put your mind to it, there's a lot of creative things you can do, but you said it, the trigger is when you don't need something. Mm-hmm. And that's, you don't just water plants when they're thirsty.
Right.
Like you water them because they need watered.
Yeah,
consistently. So you're not just doing that because a couple of those branches look a little dry. Let me give it some water. So yeah, it's been 3 weeks.
Come yeah. on.
So you water.
I love things. That analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. So you water things because that's what they deserve on a regular basis. And there's different. You do it when they not out of out of. You do it out of. Not so much out of desperation. You're not watering the plant because it's desperate. You water in the plant because that's what it needs.
No. So first off, thank you very much for being able to just take some time in your day. I know it's a Friday and I know you got some big things going on after, but just to be able to take a little time. I know everything that you have said has been absolutely phenomenal. Will help somebody nonetheless. So thank you. Be able to not only you're giving information, you're giving stories from your coaching perspective, but then you're also doing it from the administrative perspective. So it was a beautiful blend to be able to get both of them and help the young coaches moving up. So thank you for giving us the time, and we really do appreciate you being on here. Back with Rising Coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I have noticed too, being on the other side of it all, is that there's a lack of representation when it comes to coaches. And so I've sat at tables with administrators that are making decisions for coaches, and none of them, other than myself, have had coaching experience. So I say that's my shameless pitch. If anyone is considering like leaving coaching to get in athletics, like, I would be happy to be a resource, because there needs to be more of us in those rooms making decisions for coaches, because unless you've coached, you don't really know what a coach needs or what a coach goes through. And it's unfortunate that we have people that have never coached that are making decisions for coaches themselves. It's like a non-student athlete making decisions for student athletes, right? You're not going to know what they really need or what they actually go through. And it's a lived experience that you have to go through it to know it. And same with coaches, it's a lived experience. And so if there's ever anyone, or if you happen to have a topic where it's like, how did the gist of how transitioning or how to mold the resume from coaching to admin, I'd be happy to help, because I've been talking to a lot of current coaches that, considering the climate of where athletics is, they're thinking about leaving coaching. And I'm like, don't leave it completely. Come on this side and help make the decisions for the coaches, especially because you've been on the side where it was difficult. And just my shameless plug, if everybody wants to join.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Come on.
No, I'm glad you said that. That's so true. You're right. No, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen that have never cooked a meal, but they're deciding on what's on the menu. So I'm glad you said that.
Well, like I said, thank you very much for being back on here. And for everybody out there, that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here again. We will talk with you all soon. And all you coaches out there, keep working. Keep rising, coaches. We'll see you soon. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.